Tonight, we take on one of the most important and controversial issues in modern politics, redistricting. Every 10 years after the census, political maps are redrawn across America. In theory, it's about fair representation and making sure communities have an equal voice. In reality, it has often become a power struggle where politicians choose their voters instead of voters choosing their politicians. This week, Virginia voters once again weighed in on the future of how districts are drawn through renewed debate over independent map making and reform efforts. But Virginia is hardly alone. For generations, Republicans and Democrats alike have used map drawing to protect incumbents, punish opponents, and lock in political power. From Illinois to Maryland, from North Carolina to California, from Texas to New York, no party has clean hands. So tonight we ask, is redistricting a legal political strategy or a threat to representative government? Should independent commissions replace legislatures? And why do both parties suddenly hate gerrymandering only when they lose? I'm Skynell Hughes, and this is America First. Good evening. Before anything else, I want to acknowledge the frightening incident involving the shooter at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. We are incredibly grateful for the swift action of the United States Secret Service, law enforcement, and all security personnel who helped ensure people were protected and that everyone was safe. Events like this are meant to celebrate journalism, public service, and the role of a free press in our democracy. Violence, intimidation, and fear have no place there or anywhere in today's world. We should be able to gather, debate, disagree, laugh, and engage without worrying for our safety. Now, I've had the privilege of attending past White House correspondents' dinners, and I know firsthand how important that evening is for members of the press, the public officials who attend, and guests from across the country. Journalists deserve to feel safe doing their jobs and attending public events. But I also want to say this. You know, the American people also deserve that same sense of security every single day. Families and neighborhoods, children in schools, worshipers in church, people at concerts, stores, and community events should never have to live with the fear that violence could erupt around them. So tonight, we're thankful lives were protected. But tomorrow, we should recommit ourselves to rebuilding a society where this kind of fear is no longer normalized. Safety should not be a privilege for the powerful or the connected. It should be the standard for every American. Now, back to our topic. Because redistricting is one of those issues Washington insiders understand very well, but everyday Americans often feel powerless to stop. But here's the truth. Every state has the right to redraw districts after population shifts. That is constitutional. That is necessary. But what has happened over time is something far different. Technology now allows map makers to sort neighborhoods by voting history, demographics, turnout patterns, and ideology with stunning precision. This means that districts can be engineered to protect careers rather than actually represent communities. Now, Republicans have benefited in some states. Democrats have benefited in others. Both sides claim fairness when they hold the pen and cry foul when they do not. So from a conservative America First perspective, voters should pick leaders. Leaders should not pick the voters. The goal should be transparent maps, compact districts where possible communities kept together when practical, and systems the public can trust. Because if citizens lose faith in elections before a single ballot is cast, democracy itself, well, it's weakened. So joining me now are Larry Ward, chairman of Constitutional Rights PAC, and Nate Chesnick. Nate Chesnick, campaign manager and surrogate for Eugene U for Congress. Thank you so much for joining me, Nate and Larry.
Thank you for having us.
Larry, I want to give you the first start on this, because give us your reaction to the attempted shooting over the weekend at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and more importantly, what we have learned and the reaction by people on both sides since Saturday night.
Well, look, it's obviously just another attempt on President Trump's life, another assassination attempt. We've seen this kind of escalate for years through the Tea Party, through censorship, through the demonetization, through shutting us up, through shadow banning. When they can't shut us up, then they try to take away our vote like they're doing in Virginia. And when they can't stop that, then they resort to teeing up people, you know, to go out and commit these kind of acts of violence. And that's exactly what we saw. This guy was nothing more than an MSNBC, watching liberal lunatic who bought in everything that they were saying, and then, you know, committed the violence that was pretty much egged on by the Democrats.
But then I have to bring you in, Nate, on this, because what do you take about the choice of this gunman choosing the White House Correspondents' Dinner, where many would say you have more Democrats in that room because it is a room filled with the press, and you have Republicans in it. Why? What is the significance of you think him choosing this event over the countless others that Donald Trump and his administration appears at?
The shooter left a manifesto that indicates that every step of the process was opportunistic for him. So I think this choice was a target of opportunity. He clearly was radicalized by Democratic rhetoric, including what seems to be a lot of mainstream rhetoric based on his social media history, at least mainstream within the Democratic Party, and yet chose to attack the Correspondents' Dinner in an effort to harm Trump administration officials. And that just means it was a target of opportunity. There were potential security lapses there. But fortunately, the Secret Service and other federal agents stepped in bravely. I think what's most striking about this situation is just the equanimity on President Trump's base. When the shooting started, it shows that for him, assassination attempts and political violence have become so normalized that he is calm in those moments. And that's unfortunate.
Well, and that brings us to kind of the conversation that we're having today, which has caused a lot, especially following last week's Virginia elections. It's causing a lot of heat, both on Republican and Democrat side, because we're going to go to gerrymandering, because Americans hear the word gerrymandering and they really don't fully understand it. And let's talk about it. Last week following the Virginia, definitely the heat was risen in a lot of the conversations that Americans were having, both on in the media as well as within their houses, anger or necessarily acceptance at what had happened in Virginia because of the voters. Most Americans don't fully understand it. Is modern redistricting simply politics as usual, do you feel like, or has, do you think, become a very serious threat to voter confidence and the rhetoric that goes with it? Larry.
You said it right. It's engineering. It's social engineering, and it's what the Democrats do best. Look, I know the Republicans, you know, do redraw lines and are trying to fight battles, but typically we draw lines to get them back to a fair system. You know, the Democrats go and draw lines to make everything unfair. I live in Virginia. A 10-to-1 Democrat to Republican representation is not what Virginia is. Virginia is basically a purple state. A 5-to-4 or 6-to-5 congressional representation is about right. That's what the voters voted for. And that's what they're doing here, is they're trying to take away our vote. They're trying to disenfranchise us. They use the terms over and over again that they're trying to make fair elections, and they're blaming the MAGA takeover. And quite frankly, it didn't work. The Virginia voters rejected that. I'm going to tell you for sure, I've been studying not only our governor, who had some issues when she ran against Nick Freitas for Congress, and I believe that she lost in that race and kind of cheated her way to victory in 2020. And I think she did it again with this particular referendum. I hope that the Justice Department is paying attention. But there were a lot of very odd things that happened at, you know, especially with Fairfax holding their vote to the very last minute. And then, of course, pushing through 65,000 votes in an eye blink to flip the vote. But I think Virginians rejected this. And we're, you know, hopefully it comes out in the wash.
Okay. So, Nate, I want to get to you because you're in Texas. But while we're on Virginia, and you brought it up, Larry, that you are in Virginia, let me just ask. Did Republicans do everything they could to save this? There's a lot of accusations going around that people that are with the Trump administration could have stepped in. There was not a major marketing get out the vote push amongst folks to get the Republicans out to the votes. That the Republicans really just didn't show up. You're right. Majority of Virginians are conservative, but they didn't show up and vote. So do you think the Republicans did everything they could, or did they just think that it was going to go their way or not go their way, and they just stayed out?
you know, quite frankly, the Virginia Republican Party leaves a lot to be desired. It's not very well organized. It's not very well funded. I think it's just kind of the best operation we had was during Governor Youngkin's election, and quite frankly, just couldn't hold on to it. And you know, it is a little bit of a shame, but I do think we won. I think in spite of the GOP not turning out, I think we won.
Okay. So let's go to Texas, because that's where Democrats are saying, hey, Republicans just did this in Texas. They're the ones that set the standard for this. Nate, you're down there. How do you think the people of Texas look at this, especially considering Governor Ron DeSantis came out on Monday with his own plan that's going to take away 4 Democrat congressional seats and put them in Republican hands? Do you think this was something that the Republicans have brought on themselves because they introduced it amongst this administration?
I'm actually in Georgia,
but
you are correct that the Texas case was what started this round of conflict over redistricting. That was something that Donald Trump initiated with Texas governor. Their redistricting efforts have been successful. Then California, Maryland, and others followed suit. There was some escalation in Virginia, but then the Republicans in Indiana blinked. And now the Democrats in Virginia have re-escalated this redistricting fight, and they've done so very aggressive. And I think the theme of all of this is that we now live in an era of extreme partisanship, hyper-partisanship, in which the center is not holding, and we will see whether or not the courts will sustain the legality of this obvious, nakedly partisan redistricting effort by the Virginia legislature.
You know, that's a really good point about that. And I apologize for getting your location wrong. It's just and Georgia itself is its own case study. When you're looking at the majority of the state is red, and yet it magically went for Joe Biden in 2020, which obviously threw the election to the Democrat side. Virginia has become this case study, I think, after its referendum and reform debates over independent commissions. Nate, let me stick with you, because what lessons should other states learn from there? You went down the history of the past. What should they learn moving forward?
Well, what they should learn moving forward, especially Republican legislatures, is there's no point in de-escalating this, because the Democrats are going to do everything they can to violate what are supposed to be principled objections they have to partisan gerrymandering and commit some of the most egregious partisan gerrymandering that we've ever seen. And they will justify it on an effort to level the playing field and maintain fundamental fairness. But that's clearly not the case. They're also going to use the rhetoric that this is challenging an authoritarian president and for pro-democracy efforts, but this spaghetti that they have drawn, that the state legislature, not the election board, has drawn in Virginia, it clearly disenfranchises voters in central and southern Virginia. And so there is nothing democratic about it. And that naked hypocrisy, that rank hypocrisy, is something that Republicans are going to have to muster the courage to challenge. Now, on the question of whether or not Republicans did everything they could on this effort, Democrats brought out heavyweights. The face of the yes referendum was, the yes side of the referendum was President Obama. Eric Holder's also been heavily involved in this. The Democrats outspent the Republicans almost 3-1. I think the Democrats spent about 75 to 80 million on this, and Republicans only spent 25 million on the no side. And so that is an important thing to consider.
Right. Nate, you bring up a really, really good point. You talk about the money that was involved in that. Stay with us, please, both Larry and Nate, because after the break, we're going to discuss solutions. Should America move towards an independent commissions, maybe computer-generated maps, or stricter court standards? And would either party ever support reforms that might risk their own power? More when America First returns. Welcome back to America First. I'm Scotty Nell Hughes. Now, tonight, we're discussing redistricting, political power, and whether the American voter is getting a fair deal. I can't think of two better gentlemen to join me this than Larry Ward, chairman of Constitutional Rights PAC, and Nate Chesick, campaign manager and surrogate Eugene Yu for Congress. Thank you so much for joining me, gentlemen. Larry, I want to go to you, because if you could reform redistricting tomorrow, what is the first change you think we would need to do?
Yeah, it's absolutely got to come out of the party in power's hands. It's got to have an independent commission. And what I mean independent is I mean truly independent, where an equal number of Republicans and an equal number of Democrats and an equal and a representative number of independents on the actual commission. You know, not this you know, weighted party system where they can kind of just push through redistricting. But will they do it? The answer is no. One of the things that they tried to sell in Virginia was this is temporary. It's going to go back in 2030. This is a temporary solution. There has never been in the history of the United States any kind of Democrat that took power temporarily. They take power permanently. And so there's no way they're going to willingly give up power. It's actually got to be up to the Supreme Court of the United States, I think.
Larry, while you bring that up, I've got to ask you, you bring up the courts. Do you think the courts should have stronger authority to strike down these extreme partisan maps, or does that create potentially judicial overreach, which opens up a whole new level of problems?
Well, in this case, in Virginia, you know, the Virginia Supreme Court, this is an open and shut case. They violated the Virginia Constitution to actually even get it on the ballot. They're, you know, not even run the vote, but even get it on the ballot. They violated the Virginia Constitution for up and down. You know, they got the judgment that just came, the stay that just came was absolutely unbelievably excoriating against the Democrats. But The truth is that the Virginia Supreme Court could rule in favor of the Democrats because the courts are as partisan, especially when they're Democrat-weighted, as they've ever been. So, you know, I hope we get to a point where we have justice first and not partisan politics first in our courts, but you just can't rely on it.
Well, and I like that dream. I like that goal. I think that should be the goal. That's a goal, but I also like, you know, free ice cream on Mondays and everything else that's never going to happen. Nate, my bigger issue about this, the so what of this that I'm really worried about, is moving forward. Everything we're doing right now is obviously going to impact. You are seeing states right now with abysmally low record turnout in early voting in a lot of these elections of this election year, already midterms. How much damage do you think has been done when voters already believe these elections are rigged before their campaigns even begin?
Well, I think that comes back to the question that you asked at the outset, which is what is the legality of this extreme partisan gerrymandering? And there are two precedents that we need to think about. One is RUCO, where the court's holding stands for the proposition that issues of partisan gerrymandering by state legislatures are non-justiciable in federal courts sheerly on the basis of partisan gerrymandering, and Moore v. Harper, which did open up absolutely ordinary judicial review on cases of state redistricting redrawing by the state Supreme Court. So the question is whether or not it will be legal comes down to 50 separate state Supreme Courts, where Kreitarks will essentially rule from the bench and decide what the future of our political process will be. And that will challenge the legitimacy of the American election processes in ways we perhaps haven't seen since Bush v. Gore. What the important lesson for Republicans is in all of this, since this is a new era of extreme partisanship in lawfare, is we need to get as many of our kids through law school as possible. We need to pack the courts on state courts, especially state Supreme Courts, because they will decide the future of our data-driven, infomocracy-style democracy. And I also want to say that while all of this is the Virginia case is up in the air because of the procedural violation challenges, I do think the Virginia Supreme Court will possibly decide this on the substantive issue of whether or not these maps are compact and contiguous. And I think it's very clear from taking a single look at them that they are not. And that is violative of the state constitution and state statutes, as much about this process has. Unfortunately, the district court in Richmond, the court of Thorne Beglin, decided in favor of the Democrats on this, although even that a judge signaled that there were concerns about whether or not the maps meet the compactness requirement.
You know, and to your point on that one, you're talking about, you know, we're talking about the judges, but it ultimately comes down to past elections. Elections have consequences. Larry, you know this. Wasn't this predicted when the governor was elected, when a Democrat, very progressive governor, was elected a few months, was it last election term in Virginia? This was never hidden. This was not something that they just surprised us with. We knew this was coming. Isn't this the goal? And shouldn't all voters across America expect this if a Democrat gets in, or even a Republican gets into that state, that state is going to be redistricted if you are around a census version, a census timeline? Shouldn't that be the expectations from here on out?
Yeah, it absolutely should. Look, this governor, you know, tried to hide the fact that she wore a fishbowl on her head in Congress during COVID. She tried to hide the fact that she's a crazy liberal, and it worked. You know, we I like Winston Sears. I think she would have been a great governor, but she was not a great candidate. And quite frankly, it was a bad year to run. And you know, just having the most liberal, you know, former CIA, former deep stater in charge of our state, of course this was going to happen. I actually really like the idea the Trump administration put out, which is make D.C. square again. Take Arlington and Alexandria, the little pieces of that state in Virginia that were part of Washington, D.C., and move it back, because it was actually unconstitutionally given to Virginia. Move it back to Washington, D.C. It was done so to protect slave owners in those cities. Move them back to Washington, D.C. and repair that wrong and turn Virginia red for generations.
But then the fear would be that they would make sure that made D.C. a statehood. You would see that push again if those two districts joined. Would that be a fear that you would have?
Nah, because it's unconstitutional for D.C. to be a state. I mean, we'd have to, you know, amend the Constitution. So I have no fear of that at all. But I do want Virginia to be a red state. I do want to take the federal government center of Washington, D.C. and give it back to D.C. and turn Virginia back into a country state that it is.
That would definitely solve a lot of issues, I feel like, when it comes to Virginia, because it ultimately usually comes down to the state of Virginia and where they go. Nate, I want to ask you this question, because if Americans want stronger trust in their elections, which I think every American does, can we get there without fixing how districts are drawn? Or is this truly one of those key cracks in the foundation that must be patched and fixed if we're ever going to restore trust of the American people?
There are three issues in the election system that are going to have to be settled in order to fully sustain the legitimacy of American election systems. One is the influence of money, particularly soft money, in elections, in both contributions and expenditures. Two is this question of redistricting that I think is absolutely unavoidable and will have to go before the courts and ultimately in the court of public opinion. And I think the third issue is the influence of voting machines and the legacy of challenges the voting machines have presented in the process of casting ballots.
And to you, Nate, to Larry, do you agree with that, or do you think there's anything else that could be done besides that could restore integrity, besides getting this issue fixed?
Yeah, arrest the cheaters. I think Nate's absolutely right on all three points, but you got to arrest the cheaters. We got to see perp walks. We got to see people who were in 2020. We have to still hold 2020 accountable. They stole elections. They put through duplicate ballots. They stole it in every way possible. And we have the goods on them. Arrest them. It's time to hold people accountable. That's how you deter election theft, is prosecute the thieves.
But I think that is why a lot of Americans are very frustrated right now with our DOJ and those that are in intelligence for not doing what it is needed to hold those people accountable. Thank you so much, Larry Ward, Nate Chesick. Thank you so much for joining me on this.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much indeed.
You know, redistricting should never be about revenge. It should never be about protecting careers. It should never be about punishing communities for how they vote. Yet for decades, both parties have treated map drawing as warfare. Americans, well, guess what? We deserve better. They deserve districts that make sense, elections that matter, and leaders who must earn votes instead of engineering outcomes. An American first system, well, it puts citizens first, not the consultants, not party bosses, and definitely not politicians who are protecting their own seats. If either party wants to prove it believes in democracy, start by giving power back to the voter. My thanks tonight to our guest for a very smart and candid conversation. And thank you for watching. I'm Scottie Nell Hughes, and this has been America First. See you soon.